We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag. Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Name, address, phone number, even details about your family. All being pulled from public records and the internet, and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Plus, they alert you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal tool. It's a full digital security suite. VPN, antivirus, password manager, spam call protection, and dark web monitoring for your social security number, bank logins, and passwords. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other services charge the same, but only cover one or maybe two areas. With Aura, you get all of it in one simple app. Right now, you can try Aura for free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. Check website for more details.
They're trying to make it six up, and the kick is no good. Williams throwing, and it's caught for the touchdown by DJ Moore. One last gasp. Moving guys around, fires to the end zone, and it is broken up. The Bears win it in a crazy one.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up, and let's go!
Here we go!
I get my hair cut. I try to keep myself in decent shape, but, you know, I mean, there's only so much you can do.
And the beard seems to be staying for you. You seem to be fine with it.
Well, I have some scarring from my bike accident.
Oh, right.
And I need some plastic surgery to fix that. So beard
really?
Is something. Yeah.
Are you going to get it?
No, the beards are fine. It's okay.
Where can you show me where it is?
Up here, it's pretty bad. There's one down here, like a Harrison Ford type of scar. Makes me look tough. This one's kind of ugly. So that's why. And I couldn't just grow a mustache because nobody has a mustache anymore. Unless you had one like in the 70s and you just kept it like Wally Bruckner. But, you know, other than that, no.
Now, there is a reference, Andy, that few people recognize. If you understood the reference, email me at zabe@yahoo.com. I'll put your name in a pool for a small prize. All right, Andy, these games this weekend were like the proverbial crystal blue meth that Walter White cooked up in Breaking Bad. The
right.
Purity, the potency. We almost went 4-for-4. They were 3-for-3 on every game. The winning touchdown came from the team that was trailing in the final 2 minutes before the Niners just squeezed out the life of the Philadelphia Eagles. Pretty good weekend.
Didn't Tom Brady say something about Philadelphia didn't want to score here too quickly? I mean, it seemed like he thought this was a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, he said time is not a consideration for them when there was about a minute 20 to go.
But he said something like, you have to think about not scoring too quickly.
No. In fact, no. I disagree with that philosophy, and it came up in a unique way in the Bills-Jags game because the Josh Allen tush-push, which we're going to get into in a second, took him down after review to the one, but they had a full minute and change, and they were thinking, the Jaguars don't have any timeouts. We could run just a kneel down and then bleed off about 40 seconds to give us 20 seconds for three plays to get it in from probably the two. Because a kneel down loses a yard, right?
Right, right. Yeah.
I was thinking at the time, I go, I wouldn't fuck around with it. I'd get the touchdown first and then worry about playing defense, which they did, and they won the game with a pick. 100%. Would you agree?
100%. Now, what's the metric has changed with these field goal kickers who can make it from 60 yards. And so,
and Cam Little for the Jaguars has stupid range.
And also the kickoff rules have changed too. You know, used to be able to just kick it out of the end zone. The other team gets it on the 20. Now, you know, the landing zone and the way that they line up. So, yeah, I mean, it has changed, but also anything can happen on any play. You can fumble a snap. You can, you know, something can happen. And
illegal
so,
motion, yeah. A lineup penalty, which happened in week 18. These things happen. And then all of a sudden you're like, fuck, there's only 20 seconds now. And it's second and goal at the 8. Yeah. This is not good. So I think they played it right. And when it came down to this game we just finished watching, the Eagles, I thought with a minute 20, should have used at least one of their timeouts because they ended the game taking two timeouts that did nothing for their outcome of the game. They were after the fourth down incompletion, and the Niners were able to just run out the clock. So,
why wouldn't you at least try a run? You never know. You've got Saquon Barkley. He might be able to break one. You know, you got your timeouts. Why are you throwing on every down?
Yeah, I thought it was suboptimal. I think these teams get too cute thinking about, well, we don't want to leave them too much time. Score a touchdown first to take the lead and then worry about playing defense later. All right, that said, these games were awesome. And I have something for show and tell here in case anyone ever, Andy, wanted to know, why is the NFL so popular? And remember, Mark Cuban once said famously about 25 years ago now, it's been a while.
I thought it was more recent than that. I thought it was within the last 15.
All right, give people the Mark Cuban quote.
He said something to the effect like, pigs get fat, they get taken to the slaughterhouse and they get slaughtered, or hogs or something. It had to do with the NFL getting too piggish, and eventually they would get slaughtered by being pigs.
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered was the phrase. And it was about, I think, the NFL hedging into Christmas Day.
Right.
Which was the NFL's domain. Okay.
Just on that point, just to emphasize that, last year when Christmas Day came on a Wednesday and the NFL goes, we never played on a Wednesday before, but it's Christmas, we're going to take that.
Right. So they go, we'll figure it out. We'll stitch together some extra bye weeks and we'll put some of the teams on a Tuesday. Like they just, we'll make it work.
Yeah. And the NBA goes, whoa, that's on our day. No, it's not anymore. As a matter of fact, Ted Leonsis told me this, that the NBA had a lockout. I think it was, I forget the year, but the owners felt it was so important to play on Christmas Day that they caved to the players and made sure that they were back on the court in time to play games on Christmas. That's how important it was to the NBA. And then the NFL came along and, hey, you're getting really good ratings on that day. We're going to take that too.
The NFL is king for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is that it is a completely unpredictable betting vehicle to tickle America's gambling appetites. That's number one. Number two is fantasy, obviously. Number three is the way that it binds families and communities together because they go tailgating together and they got their friends and they'll travel to other cities. It's got a limited enough schedule that you don't have to tend to it 5 days out of the week or 6 days out of the week. It's a once a week episode. like the Sopranos in their heyday. It's a football Sunday. Let's go watch the game. So that's low commitment. And because it's so interesting in strategy and everything else, it can attract the eye of just about anyone. And it's and women love the NFL because it's the perfect amount of commitment for them. So
and also, over the course of a game, there may be four, five, at most three and outs. Every drive, there's some type of drama that you can get into. And then when you have these epic drives at ends of games and everybody's sitting around second guessing, what are they going to do here? So no other sport has that.
The coach is an idiot. The quarterback's a bum.
Right.
Why do we take a timeout there? Those are universal things.
Right. You have to be a real baseball geek to go, ooh, he threw him a slider. I wouldn't have gone there. I'd have gone split finger. You don't have that, you know.
Right.
Football, either it's a run or a pass, and you can second guess what they're doing.
But at the element, at the core of the NFL's genius, and you say, okay, what's the chemical in crack that makes it so powerful? I submit to you this photo right here, Andy. This photo of Christian Watson trying to leap into the end zone against the Bears, getting blown up by number 29, coming across at full speed, dislodging the football in midair, another defender closing in. This picture, this is from the great Evan Siegel, who was the Packers official team photographer. This photo right here, you just slip this to any non-believers under their eyes about why is the NFL so popular? And you just go, this happens. This happens or some variant of this every game because these guys are freak athletes.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's good stuff right there. Okay, let's go through some of the games. Rams and Panthers. The Rams gut the Panthers on a late drive by Matthew Stafford on what was maybe a little bit of prevent defense. Do you think the Panthers just got scurred in the moment? Because I know a number of fans did think that.
There was some of that, but you're also facing, guys may win the MVP. And
true.
Been there, done that. And the league is set up for those things to happen. And I think the Rams were the biggest favorite of the weekend. Weren't they like 10.5?
10.5, favorites? Yes.
That's big in the playoffs. I mean, how many times does that happen over the years?
The sharps were apparently on Carolina plus the big number because Carolina beat the Rams earlier this year. There's a lot of anomalies in that first game that everyone thought weren't going to happen again. But the one thing that they didn't factor in is what if Stafford fucked up his fingers, hitting him on the arm of a defender, and then was terrible after that injury. That was one thing. But here's a video of a guy who insists that it was prevent defense. Take a listen.
I mean, you got to see this shit to believe it. Season on the line, nobody within 10 yards of a receiver. I mean, look at this shit. You're 10 yards off of every fucking receiver, you stupid fucks. I mean, look at this. Are you fucking me? You're 7 to 8 yards off of every receiver, and what do you know? He's gonna get 7 yards. This one made me want to fucking kill myself. This guy is fucking 15 yards off of Puka. Are you shitting me? I mean, is this not just fucking haram? And my voice is gone, so I can't scream that much. But this is fucking insane. And what do you know? Maybe if you're 10 yards off every receiver, Stafford might moonwalk and fuck you in the ass and end your season.
Yeah. See, that? No other sport can draw that kind of passion. The outfielder's playing too deep. Oh, my God. There's going to be a short fly ball that he's going to miss. You don't get that. Yeah.
No, and there might have been fundamentally sound reasons. Dave Canales, after the game, said, well, we had the looks we wanted, and we wanted to make sure to do this and do that. We don't know on the couch, Andy, a thing about
He probably took off a helmet for the last time in high school.
If he ever put one on.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But that said, coaches do play conservative often.
Yeah.
And I do think that the fact they only rushed five. I was watching the final seven plays, and then they had their DBs playing so off the wideouts. I'm just like, you're 8-9. You're winning by all against all odds is a 10.5 point dog at home. YOLO, fucking blitz a few times. It's the worst that could happen.
But you know, if Matthew Stafford beats them deep on a play, then that
at least he beats you, at least he beats you deep quick, and you might get a chance to get the ball back. I'm just saying.
But the guy's saying, "Don't give him some space. What are you playing so close up on the line for?"
Also, Cam Newton was there for the first time in a long time, and the story was it was notable because kind of since he left and stopped playing and went to the he was at the Patriots for a little bit, I think, after he played in Carolina. He is supposedly estranged, kind of, from his former team. This does happen with stars, with their former teams, for a variety of reasons, some of which can be legit. Others are just very petty gripes. Doesn't Bradshaw have a rift with the Steelers?
I don't think it's the Rooneys. I think it was his coach, Chuck Knoll.
Oh.
And Chuck Knoll has passed away, so I don't know what has happened there. But one of the most bizarre things I ever saw at the Hall of Fame was Vern Lundquist. They don't do induction speeches anymore, but in those days they did. Vern Lundquist did the induction speech for Terry Bradshaw. You're talking about a guy who had legendary teammates, you know, with Franco Harris and all the great defensive guys, Jack Ham, Lambert, all those guys. He chose Vern Lundquist to induct him.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was the Chuck Knoll thing. And he's done interviews. He said, yeah, he hated playing for Chuck Knoll. He hated it all the way to four Super Bowl championships, but he's made no bones about that.
You know, he should have had induct him, even though he's now passed away. Phil Robertson. The big Duck Dynasty guy played.
But nobody knew who he was. No, at that point, Duck Dynasty hadn't started, so nobody. You know, he was a nobody.
You're right, because he went into the Hall of Fame when
he went probably in the 90s.
Yeah. But yeah, right. It kills me that Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty was played football with Terry at Louisiana Tech in the late 60s.
Not only that, Phil Robertson was the starting quarterback as a junior when Bradshaw was a sophomore. And Phil Robertson had another year of eligibility and said, "Yeah, I'd rather hunt duck and go fishing." So he left school and Bradshaw got the job. And, you know, by senior year, he was the best in the country.
I mean, it's just kind of amazing here. Let me get a picture of good old Phil Robertson up. I'm proud that you actually watched a little bit of that show, Andy, or at least you know who he is.
I read about it. His politics don't line up with mine, but yeah.
You're saying he is not a Bayou Jew? There's old Phil Robertson right there.
That's nothing to do with religion, but
I know. You know.
Here's another cool trivia on that. The running back on that team was Bob Brunet, who was with the Redskins for about 8 or 9 years. And it is my contention that, because I don't know if they keep track of this, Bob Brunet is the all-time preseason rushing leader for the Redskins because they used to play
six
exhibition games, and Larry Brown used to take a beating. So they hardly played Larry Brown in the preseason. And it was Bob Brunet toting the pill in all those games. So I will take that to my grave that it was Bob Brunet who led him in preseason rushing.
Not to be confused with the Sultan of Brunei. That'd be Bob Brunet, not the Sultan of Brunei. That takes us to Sunday night. And the Green Bay Packers and Matt LaFleur coughed up an all-time lead. 21-3 at half, 21-6 after three, 27-16 with six and change to go. The Bears scored 25 points in the fourth quarter. They're one of only three teams in playoff history to score 25 or more in the fourth quarter and or overtime.
Right.
And one of the other instances was the Patriots coming back from the Falcons in the Super Bowl. Who was a young, fresh-faced coordinator on that Falcon team, Andy?
It was young Kyle Shanahan.
And a young Matt LaFleur.
Right. Yeah. He was part of that staff, wasn't he? Yeah.
So, as I tweeted, because now it's going to come down to, do they really want to think about firing Matt LaFleur when they are all ready to give an extension? I said, you know, in Matt's defense, other than the two fourth quarter losses to the Niners in the playoffs and the NFC Championship game loss to the Buccaneers at home and whatever this was tonight, this rarely happens to him. which was my way of being sarcastic. This is what the guy does. LaFleur should absolutely be fired. But I know how the Packers vibrate as an organization, having spent 6 years in close contact with them in a way with the team, with the station in Milwaukee and being the rights holders. They are so conservative. They are so sensitive about
image. Who's the president?
The new president is Ed Policy, the son of Carmen.
Oh, okay. But because they have, I've never heard of this. They have mandatory retirement.
Yes, because of 70. The way they,
yeah. And so Mark Murphy, who I think is a pretty sharp guy. I know him a little bit. He was forced to retire, right? Because he turned 70.
Yes. It might even be 69 and a half or something like that.
He's out, and that's a surprise, yeah.
So, yeah, it's 70 is the number. But here's the thing. So the Packers, they're super conservative. They don't want to look bad. They don't want to be mean. And because they are this miracle child of the NFL, this ownerless team with a board of directors, a team president who's kind of an owner but doesn't have nearly the kind of juice that a real owner does, right. And then a GM and a coach, they don't make the kind of impulsive moves like Danny Boy Snyder getting on his private jet, liquored up at 3 a.m. after a bad loss to go out to Shanahan's 20,000-square-foot mansion in Denver to lure him to be the coach, right? Because that actually happened. Mike Wise wrote all about it. Remember?
Yeah, no. It was after a loss to the Detroit Lions, who had, I think, a 19-game losing streak. They went back to Dulles, the hangar where they had the private plane. He's sitting around drinking with his boys, Vinny and the PR guy, Carl Swanson.
Oh yeah. Boy, hot Carl was Swanson, there. Huh?
And he goes, "Let's go hire Shanahan." And so, as
who's
going to
tell
goes,
Snyder no?
No. As the story goes, they call Shanahan, who had been fired by Denver. Oh.
Yeah.
And he said something to the effect, "Well, I'm not coming back, but I got a big house. So if you want to come over, go ahead." So they get back on the plane and they fly to Denver. And Danny and Vinny and Carl show up at his house at like 2 a.m. And, they sit around and talk to him. And I guess the deal was essentially made, but he said he wasn't going to coach that year. So they let Zorn coach the rest of the season. Next year, he's their coach.
So that's what, and there are a number of owners who are billionaires in this league who are fairly well grounded for billionaires, but they all have yachts the size of the USS Nimitz. And they operate in a way that is far different than what the miracle accident that is the Packers with their board does. So a loss like this for any other coach would have been fatal by this morning. LaFleur would have been fired, no question about it. I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's 50-50. They end up keeping them, making them fire some of the assistant coaches. Rich Bisaccia is the special teams coach, and they were dog shit again on special teams. Now, Bisaccia didn't miss the two field goals and the extra point that McManus did, but everything they do special teams-wise has been terrible for years now. And Bisaccia is the highest-paid special teams guy. So he's going to be one coach? Sacrificial guy. He was briefly the Raiders interim guy.
Right. And McManus is interesting because he was the one that the Commanders wanted 2 years ago.
And then the
there
was a plane flight allegation from stewardesses claiming he got all liquored up and did inappropriate things. That whole allegation fizzled, and then he got cleared. And by that time, the Commanders had moved on to other kickers.
Yeah, but at that point, coming off Danny and the toxic atmosphere,
he couldn't afford to do that.
That was the one team he could. I think another team might have been able to walk through it, but that was the one team they couldn't. And I think since then, they've had something like 7 or 8 kickers.
Yeah. But I don't think they're a fire LaFleur. I do think they should just make him go into his lame duck season. I think there is a absurd and illogical fear of, my God, you can't have the coach go into his last season of his contract. That'll put too much distraction or too much pressure on him. I say it'll test whether he can handle the pressure of both winning in the NFL and knowing this is his last year. To me, it would be perfectly sensible, but teams don't seem to want to do that for whatever
reason. I think that's an old notion, though. I think that goes back to the days when, you couldn't leave. Like, there was no free agency. Now that players come and go like they do, I mean, I don't think it's as big a deal as it used to be. I'm surprised that teams don't do more of that.
LaFleur is a really good coordinator. And there's no shame in that, Andy. We've seen over the years, having watched the NFL, certain guys are best suited to do that. Because the head coach position requires a lot of podium time. It requires a lot of CEO and manager time to keep everyone pulling the rope in the same direction. And some coordinators just aren't up to it. Also, when it comes to managing the game, LaFleur is terrible with timeouts. He's terrible with the notion of conservative play calling versus aggressive. And this is why he loses a lot of these games when they come down the stretch. So, of course, they should fire him. 50-50, they actually do, because they're just so nice and so conservative. And they've built up Disneyland around Lambeau Field, where I'm sure, you know, executive number one says, well, how's the Aaron's sledding hill? Is it profitable this year? Yes, sir. More so than ever. What about the Johnsonville Broad House we own? Yes, outside the Oneida Gate, that one's record profits as well. Well, then, let's not make any sharp moves.
I've seen actually quite a bit detail on that, because I went to a focus group for the new stadium for the Commanders.
Oh.
And they were showing that as like, hey, would you like to see that, you know, in the new stadium? Boy, it looks great. That would be really tremendous.
Well, here's the thing. So the Aaron's Sledding Hill, sponsored by Aaron's Power Equipment and Snowblowers, you get sponsorship money and they charge on game day to go down the hill. You know what it costs to take one ride down the hill?
I don't know, $50?
18. A way to blow my... I thought $18.
I don't know. The money... Look, you go to the stadium, people don't blink on the $18 beers.
I know. I know. So, but it is Green Bay, Wisconsin, so they got to keep it reasonable. 18's a bit much. And, you know, the Broad House sits in a chunk of parking lot that the old-timers who would go to Packer games would lament, saying, man, I remember this was just cars, and we'd have a grill, and we'd sit out, and we'd drink our line and Kugels, and it would freeze in our hands. And the team has started to buy up chunks of the surrounding neighborhood, much like Walt Disney bought up chunks of Florida under shell corporations so that nobody would know what he was doing. In this case, they're just like, we want to sell you a brat inside our building and a beer. We're going to have a band on a stage. It's going to be warm, and you're going to come in and like it. And guess what? Yeah. It's not bad, Andy. It's not bad.
But look, the whole thing has changed. There used to be an old joke about Green Bay. They say, how many Packer fans does it take to change a light bulb? And they say 6. 1 to change it and 5 to talk about the way that Vince Lombardi would have done it. Those days are gone. Those are all, it's old.
All right. The numbers on LaFleur are bad. LaFleur is 3-6 in the playoffs. The only coaches with worse playoff percentages with 8 or more games. Steve Owen, who went 2-8 over, wouldn't even know when Steve Owen coached.
Is that the Giants?
Might have been. George?
You know, that might be. The Giants they were the Buffalo Bills before the Buffalo Bills.
Oh.
And they made it to this is Y.A. Tittle. And they made it to the championship game like every year. The only time they won was 56. But I think Y.A. Tittle may have lost 3 or 4 straight NFC championship games. So that's probably what it goes back to.
The great George Allen went 2-7.
Right.
And then Marty Schottenheimer, bless his heart. I love Marty. There's a gleam, man. There's a gleam. He was 5-13 in his career in the playoffs.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. But, he was also bad managing clock and timeouts and all the stuff you have to win. But a great coach and a leader of men, Andy, a leader of men.
Tom Landry, they used to be known as next year's team every year. And then he finally won one. But I think his Super Bowl, I think he lost 3 Super Bowls. He won 2, but I think he lost 3 of them.
I would say that Ben Johnson is a good coach. I don't know if he'll become a great coach. He did not have a great game, by the way. But he did afterwards with the Bears social media team, cameras rolling, in front of them, issue this statement about the rival Packers. Fuck the Packers. Fuck them.
Yeah.
I would argue this is not very classy.
No.
This is a weak move by him.
Well, he gave the blow-by handshake to LaFleur after the game. You see that?
Yes, of course.
And that's all well and good when you win, but boy, when you lose, they let you have it for that. So I think he's trying to say to his players, hey, we're the kings of the hill now. You know, don't take any crap from the Packers, because Aaron Rodgers, you know, used to go into Chicago and say, I own you and all that. But, you know, that's a slippery slope for a guy who's in his first year, as far as I'm concerned.
Some people say it's the Dan Campbellization of the league. And somebody else pointed
Campbell
out
that Campbell
would never say anything like this because he has class and respect for the other coaches in the league.
Right. Yeah. That's you play that game, and then teams take great pride in running it up on you and kicking you when you're down. Jim Harbaugh does this to some extent, although he doesn't cuss like that, but he pisses a lot of people off too.
Yeah.
But
now, did you see the business decision, so to speak, that Packers cornerback Keyshawn Nixon made at the end of the game on not the winning touchdown, but one of the late go-ahead touchdowns by the Bears?
No, I did not make it to the fourth quarter, so I saw only highlights of the end.
Okay, this is really bad. We do know that players at times make what they call business decisions, right?
Right.
Take a look at this play by Keyshawn Nixon.
Oh yeah. Olay.
That is egregious, because even though by the time Nixon steps up into the hole, DeAndre Swift is probably going to go in, he could still try to lunge and punch. That ball's right there to be punched out of his hand. Instead, what does he do? Yoink, hops away. And it's even worse when you remember that earlier in the game, he cost the Packers 15 yards by jumping on the pile after the play was basically over. This guy should be cut today. But they made him their cornerback one, even though he was at best a slot, a nickel or a slot corner and a kick returner. And he was like, I'm cornerback one. I want to be that guy. And they made him that guy. And I think they should cut his ass. So there you go.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh, no. With MyBookie and its cash-out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.
One more thing on this game. Can I present my case against Kirk Herbstreit? I know you're a fan.
No, I think he's fine. I just think that one thing he can give you in the NFL is reference from these guys he's seen in college. You know, a lot of these guys don't have any kind of reference like that. So
right. Although somebody made a joke about, oh, there's DJ Moore, you know, he was running those routes at Maryland 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, that's not really relevant now, Kirk, but thank you on that.
Yeah.
The dog thing, does it bother you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So here you go. This tweet from Jeff Nadeau. We get it. You have a dog. Here's Herbie.
I gotta say hi to Peter.
With the commissioner. Bro hugging. Heading a golden retriever in the snow. All the players gotta come over. Oh yeah.
Well, this is more for the commissioner, because he's a stone cold thug. All he is the bad guy for the owners. So this makes him seem a little bit warm and cuddly. So that was more for him than Herbstreit, I think.
Okay, but the point is, he's a dog act, Kirk.
Yeah.
And anything that makes it more about you is distasteful.
I agree, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. And the other thing is that he's just overexposed. And unlike the other analysts in the game, he serves as a commentator for his sport by being on College Game Day and by doing appearances on ESPN. And that's fine if he wants to do it. But I would argue that those of us who watch sports and football, we're watching everything. So we see him three or four times a week.
All right. Here would be the point on this. And this is, I think, the thinking. It's the same reason that 82-year-old Al Michaels is coming back next year.
Oh, I know.
Because when you're a brand new entity in this, as Amazon is, I mean, they're known as, obviously, it's a place you order stuff online. But as a sports network, which they're trying to be, you want to have your most recognizable names there. Al Michaels is a recognizable name.
Yeah.
And Kirk. And so you can't think the way we think. We're deep in the weeds. You got to think about, you know, the guy that watches, you know, the Super Bowl and chats it up with his friend and not, you know, it does maybe watches six games a year or something like that. We're too deep in it. So I don't think we can really make that determination.
The VP of Citibank, who's being schmoozed, is going to the Amazon game and he wants to meet Al Michaels because he has an anecdote about his aunt who was at the game in Lake Placid. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to give that anecdote to Kevin Kugler, who might be a superior play-by-play man. Yeah.
When they do their big presentation. When they do their, in New York, when they do a big, you know, thing like Apple used to do.
They're like, hey guys, who do you got? We got Kevin Kugler.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you got, hey, do you believe in miracles? Yes. Hey, Al, would you like to tell that story to the advertisers? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was there at Lake Placid, and it just came to me at that moment, and I was working with Ken Dryden, and, you know, there wasn't a dry. And the people eat that stuff up. That's how you sell.
Yeah, you know? All right. Jags-Bills game, another great game. And the tush push was front and center because a key tush push on fourth and a sandwich deep inside Jags territory as there is under 2 minutes to go was the difference. And part of the problem with the, you know, Josh Allen tush push that teams have a hard time stopping is that they're, unlike Hurts, they have a technique to keep Allen upright. And then when he's upright, he keeps moving his giant legs and they carry him, which is supposed to be prohibited. Here's the play.
I am fullback, big on the tush push. There he is, shoving, and Allen's got it. Not to be denied. He's still going. Look at this.
That's not football. That's not football. It's not.
Full thoroughbred. Touchdown. And they say touchdown.
Okay. I have a simple way to trim this rule up, to make it easy to officiate, to allow incidental pushing or pulling of a runner from time to time. And it goes like this, Andy. The person who receives the snap may not be pushed, pulled, or assisted in any way. If you want to hand it off to somebody who then gets pushed, go for it. It'll take too long for it to be effective. It'll effectively neuter the play without making it too complicated to officiate. Your thoughts?
Well, I agree with that. But the reason that we allow this now is because they looked at it in, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, they said, yeah, too hard to officiate. So we're not going to officiate it at all. And that's what's going to happen. It's still going to lead to that. I read somewhere and I forget who the coach was. And it wasn't confirmed. It was just in the rumor stage. But some coach looked at the idea of actually having
hiring a midget,
a dwarf, a little person your team that you could throw over the goal line with football. And it's, you know, if George Allen, God bless him, if he was still alive, would have been the one to do that because he was interested in getting Andre the Giant on the team. He was serious about that.
Really? So, yeah. Well, and then teams would hire their own little people and launch them as sort of anti-aircraft missiles, and we'd be throwing little people in helmets at each other.
It's and I don't know what to think about it because, you know, I mean, this actually happened in baseball. Eddie Goodell was hired by
the Bill Veeck. Yeah, Bill Veeck, the famous promoter GM of the White Sox, hired an actual little person, midget or dwarf, and went up there and couldn't throw a strike because the strike zone was about the size of a teacup.
And but they had to make a rule about it afterwards. Yeah. But he looked at it and he actually put the I read about this. He put the contract into Major League Baseball's office at like 4:30 in the afternoon on a Friday. Right. And they just looked at it. Eddie Goodell. Well, okay.
So you can see here, their offensive lineman has got his arms around Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And stupid. He's just making sure he stays upright. And then they're just behind him. Yeah. I mean, a hell of a play right there. So, yeah. The other thing from the game was Antonio Romero Romo, Andy, was all over the place. He was not good. In fact, he was so not good, and you made a great tweet about this, Awful Announcing had an article up before the game was even over talking about, man, Romo is bad today.
Yeah. Yeah. It was reaction all over the country. And I put out a tweet because he
it there it is the right the there. Game, goes, this came out a half hour before the game ended from Andy Poland. There's a problem here. Yes, yeah, there is.
And I was watching towards, you know, a couple minutes to go, and I hear him go, okay, here we go, Jim. And I put out a tweet and I said, he's reached the point where he's imitating Frank Caliendo, imitating him.
Yeah.
what is he doing?
The worst part was on the Bills' first touchdown, he interjects with, hold on a second. I think I saw ref come in and signal no play. Did you see that, Jim? He signaled no play. What is going on here? And then it turned out there was no referee that did that. There was no flag. And Nance didn't even talk about it. And that's when I tweeted, CBS, you got to get your boy under control. You can't have him say this on top of a live touchdown in the playoffs. The viewer at home is going to lose his damn mind. And that's what Romo does. He just blurts things out.
Could it be? Maybe we shouldn't go here yet. But
oh boy, CTE.
Well, I'm just, you know, he did play what 12 years in the NFL. He did. He was known for taking a beating. He was a tough guy. Once played with broken ribs. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if it's that. I think he's just a goofball who doesn't really prepare.
Yeah, yeah, that probably is it. But you know, why? Was he, well, he was so good at the beginning because he'd been recently retired, I guess is the.
Well, he had a magic trick. That's the thing. And we all love the magic trick, but it didn't mean he was good in terms of adding value on a consistent basis as an analyst with the right amount of time in between plays. It's one of the other criticisms of Herb Street is that he just talks too much. That literally 2 seconds after the play is over, he's in there. And he'll spend 50 words when 7 could suffice. At least Romo, even though he was wildly wrong on a bunch of stuff, such as, oh, it's going to be a catch. Don't worry about it there, Buffalo. And then Gene Steratore jumps in saying, not so fast, my friend. The one thing about Romo at least is refreshing. If he doesn't have anything for you, he's not going to force it. And then he'll say something and make his point in 7 words sometimes when Herb Street will always take 50.
That's true. But just social media, and I don't know how much that is, but there's so much now that the push seems to be there more so than any other time. And look, he was obviously so good that he totally set the market in a direction that few people thought it would go. I mean, he's making $1 million a game. Oh. Which is now considered to be the standard for the job. If you have one of those top jobs, that's what you make.
It is outrageous. Then there was the woman who decided to thank Liam Cohen for the season in his press conference. Tell me if you can hear this, Andy.
I just want to tell you congratulations on your success, young man.
Thank you.
Hold your head up, all right? You guys have had a most magnificent season.
Thank you.
You did a great job out there today.
Appreciate
so
it.
You just hold your head up, okay?
Thanks,
and ladies
ma'am.
And gentlemen,
okay.
Duval, you the one, all
Thank
right?
You, ma'am.
You keep it going. We got another season, okay?
I appreciate
Take
it.
Take care and much continued success to you and the entire team.
Thank you, ma'am.
How did that woman get a credential, for God's sakes?
I don't know about that, but to make things worse, that was put out the first time I saw it from Adam Schefter, who put it out as being a wonderful exchange.
This is an awesome post-game exchange.
Right. Now Schefter is a long way removed from the days of sitting in those news conferences and scribbling down quotes and having to insert them in a story sometimes on deadline. But he did it for enough years that he should know that everybody in the room is thinking to themselves, Jesus, what are you doing here?
I know, exactly.
We got a job to do. This is, and the PR staffer runs a clock. Usually those things are no more than 10 minutes. So, you know, not all the questions get asked. And you and I have been in the studio before when we've gone through these things. How come they didn't ask that? How come they didn't ask that? Well, in this case, well, they might have asked that question, but old cheerleader here wanted to bake him a cake and massage just keep, his back.
You just keep your head up. You just done a great job. We love you down here. Duval, let's go. You done good job.
that is not – the press conferences have become – a little bit different over the years, and they will now let people in who aren't necessarily reporters. But that's fine. Just don't let them ask questions. That's ridiculous.
I know. And then the last game of the weekend, the Eagles, the king is dead. Reigning Super Bowl champ Philadelphia Eagles go down to the Niners in a very entertaining, tightly fought game. The Niners, as I said going into this, are just tougher than a $3 steak. They've had a shit ton of injuries themselves. They lost two absolute blue chippers in Bosa and Warner, and they still find a way to get it done. Christian McCaffrey with a sweet touchdown catch over the shoulder from their wide receiver, on an option pass.
Yeah.
And then he also had the game-winning touchdown catch as well. He led the league this year in touches at something like 440 whatever. It was the most touches, they said, since DeMarco Murray.
DeMarco Murray
for the Cowboys back in the day.
The thing about McCaffrey going into every season is he could give you that.
Or he could be out eight weeks with a hamstring.
Yeah, could play four games. And that's if he's healthy, he does that. He's unbelievable. Now, they lost George Kittle, and it looks like it's going to be an Achilles. So
that's awful.
He might be a career ender. But, they just keep bobbing along, and they're putting in guys who are on the practice squad and, you know, Mr. Irrelevant playing quarterback. Yeah, they just find a way. They're amazing. And they're also talking about – what's the linebacker who's been out all year with the broken ankle?
Warner.
Warner, yeah, he could be back.
Yeah. So I'm going to declare, and you're probably going to – cringe at this, but that's okay. I'll be the one to say it, Andy. But I think that at this point that Christian McCaffrey is the baddest white boy to ever play in the NFL. Ooh. And I'm exempting quarterbacks, but you can give me any other white boy at any other position. That dude is bad.
Well, there was a time that Dick Butkus was the most feared player in the NFL.
Okay, maybe Dick Butkus. Maybe.
Dick Butkus was – Dick Butkus was – I mean, his name was perfect. The accent was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Everything about him. In fact, the one player – it's not funny, but the one player that actually died on the field, the Detroit Lions receiver – and there's a still photo. This news traveled differently in those days. So there's a still photo of Butkus coming over, and he's waving the training staff over from the Lions. Get over here. Get over. Chuck Hughes was his name.
Yeah.
Get over here. Get over here. And people saw the photo in the paper the following day and go, "Oh my God, Butkus killed him. He killed him on the field." That's how feared he was.
Oh my God. That's how they're like, "Yeah, Butkus killed a guy. It was bound to happen at some point."
Yeah.
He's Dick Butkus.
Yeah, right. I mean, you don't understand how feared he was. Now, he had a short career and he had a bad knee and all that. But for 5 or 6 years, he was the most feared player in the NFL by miles.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at the photo in the newspaper. It's a tragic day. Hughes dies in Lions 28-23 loss to the Bears. And there's a picture of him.
Mm-hmm.
Laying completely flat on his face.
Yeah, he had
completely
hardening of the arteries.
Limp.
He wasn't hit or anything. He was running back to the huddle after a play, and his heart just gave out. And there's Butkus waving, you know. And then again, people, you know, they didn't see the high. There are no highlights to show in the evening news.
No.
And people pick up the paper the next day and they see Butkus standing over a guy who looks dead, and they go, "Oh my God."
Yeah, you might have seen the newsreel highlights the next Sunday when you're going to the movie theater. And a tragic day for the Lions as Chuck Hughes passes away on the field here. And the gridiron was
actually,
sad that
actually,
day.
I think it was 1971.
Oh, okay.
So that was the second year of Monday Night Football, and Howard Cosell did show it the following night.
The following night.
Yeah, it was a Sunday game, so that the Monday Night Football would have followed on that.
Did he actually treat it with some dignity?
You can probably find it on YouTube. I think he.
I'm going to look for this now tonight. I want to hear the way Howard Cosell sold it. Absolutely tragic to see Chuck Hughes lying motionless on the field. Our hearts go out to the Lions and Mr. Hughes's family.
Well, I mean, the number one moment for Cosell on Monday Night Football was announcing John Lennon's death. That's and I thought he did a great job with that. So,
all right. Cosell on Chuck Hughes' death. Let's just see if it pops up. Here it is, Andy.
Stadium, Detroit, Michigan, the Lions coming out onto the field to face the Chicago Bears in a game that was ultimately to produce the terrible tragedy of Chuck Hughes. This is first quarter action. The Bears trailing 3-0, but Dunshy taking the handoff from Southpaw quarterback Bobby Douglas, bursting 21 yards for the touchdown, and the Bears lead it 7-3. No thought at this time of what was to occur later. Second quarter action.
I just scrubbed through the preview panes. It doesn't seem to show the actual heart attack.
Well, they probably didn't want to. It was probably considered to be too sensitive.
This highlight clip is 2 minutes and 25 seconds, Andy. That's an eternity in today's day and age.
Did he just do that game?
This is the very next kickoff. Mac Percival.
I don't
kicking
know.
Kicking off for the Bears.
This is a semi-restored edit of Cosell's halftime highlight show in 1971. I bet he did other games. They used to let Cosell fill up 9 minutes of that 12-minute halftime, usually.
Halftime was longer than that then. They shortened it to 12 minutes probably in the 90s. It was longer. Yeah.
All right, last ad. People were making Erin Andrews' coat go viral. She had a magnificent plumage of, I'm sure, an ethical or fake fur winter coat in Philadelphia. And I dug it. I'm like, well, you go, Erin. You didn't care for her pregame interview with Purdy.
It wasn't. I think it was McCaffrey, but it wasn't. It wasn't that I didn't care for it. It's just that every time, because I usually watch at least the end of the Fox pregame, because generally the Commanders are on Fox. So when I start to settle in for the afternoon, it might be like 12:45. So I'm picking up the last 15 minutes of the Fox pregame. And that's when they run this overly hyped Erin Andrews interview where she hugs the guy and she sits across from him.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to make sure that they show her legs. Okay, fine. But every time I watch one of these, I hear the same thing from the player. We got a special group here. And then she gives like her doughy-eyed nod. And then when it's over, they throw it back to the studio. And inevitably, Strahan goes, great job, EA. And it's every damn week.
It's a couple things. You're not wrong. That's number one. Number two, did you see she was wearing those high-heeled boots?
Okay. But somebody cracked on me on Twitter and said, well, you know, this is what, you know, used to go on in the 70s with Phyllis George. And I said, yes, that's a great point. But in those days, you didn't have social media. You didn't have athletes putting out their own content. So when she got struck gold when she had Roger Staubach, and he said, you know, I like to have sex as much as Joe Namath. I just like to have it with one girl. And people went, whoa, that's great. But that's when you only got little nuggets. That's when the NFL Today was a half an hour. And that was it. Now it goes 3 hours.
Yeah, well, you know what you want is you want Mike Wallace to dig in and grill somebody. You're asking for something that's not going to happen. You want 60 minutes kind of hard-hitting Big J journalism. This is fluff, Andy. Fluff.
I know. I understand it's fluff, but it's the same fluff every week. And that same soundbite, we have a special group here. Because why? Is she going to be interviewing an athlete whose team is 1-7?
No.
Unless it's, you know, one of those stories like where everything went wrong and she gives him a big, you know, hug and, oh, yeah, everything will be better. It'll be fine next year.
What I would have loved is if she had interviewed, say, A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
And A.J. Brown would be like, man, there's some bullshit going on here with Sirianni. How much time you got? Because I got to unload some shit.
Yeah.
Hurts his ass. I want out. Now that would be an explosive Aaron Andrews interview I'd love to see.
Yeah, well, those kind of things used to happen. Will Bond loves to talk about this, that you go in the locker room and an athlete gives you a little, you know, with the finger, come on over
Let me tell you what's really going on.
Because they want it, and that's when the newspaper people were the main manufacturers of the news. So the athlete would want it out there. And so a guy like Will Bond would be the carrier of the news. And those days are gone. That doesn't happen anymore.
All right, let's wrap this up. Sorry for the technical difficulties, listeners. My internet took a total dump in the middle of this. I'll salvage what I can. Your boy had a night. Jeremy Polin went to the Peach Bowl. Indiana eviscerates Oregon. I saw the photo with his buddies from college. I said, that, my friend, is the stuff of life. Are you sure he's not going to try to make it to Hard Rock for the championship?
Well, he already said, and have you seen the prices?
Oh, my God. $4,000 for the worst seat in the house. That's the get-in price. It is believed to be, according to Darren Rovell, the highest secondary market, bottom-of-the-barrel get-in price ever for a non-Super Bowl.
But there's a big factor here, and it's not Indiana. This is a home game for Miami. So if you are a Miami fan, you take into account, you don't have to pay for a flight, you don't have to pay for a hotel, and
I'll splurge it on the ticket.
You can rationalize it, and they know they got a hot market for Indiana fans, you know, who are saying, oh, this is, you know, I didn't think this would happen
this
in my
once
lifetime.
In a lifetime, right?
Yeah.
Also, I did not know this. Indiana apparently has the largest living alumni base in the U.S. of any university.
Right.
How's that possible?
Because it's a big school.
38,000 undergrad. I looked it up. 48 if you count the grads.
Yeah. And so that has had a lot to do with it. And, you know, it's just, again, it's the first time this has happened in their lifetime. There's never been anything close to this.
I think it's a tough game because Miami's got the big boys in the trenches to make it tough. But who is going to get in the way of this downhill rolling machine that is Indiana and Cignetti? And Mendoza. Mendoza has more touchdowns than incompletions in the playoffs. Absurd.
Both these guys, I saw the Miami coach get a little snippy with SVP. Because he was, you know, suggesting that you really accomplished something. You're, whoa! But Cignetti gives off this like skunk scent. Like, don't even go there, okay? You know, don't even. That was Cristobal who said, I don't think Scott would have asked him about, you know, celebrating anything because he's.
Cristobal doesn't like being asked, is the U back?
Yeah, right.
He doesn't like that, but the U is back, and it's a great college football brand.
Absolutely.
And it's not a bad thing it's back, and we shall see. We're going to have to wait 10 days, but Jeremy, what a ride. Enjoy it. Where will he watch the championship game? At home, I assume?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing about living in Seattle. All his boys are scattered, so I guess it'll be a big text chain, or maybe they'll all do FaceTime together. Yeah. But, I mean, but the ride that they had was unbelievable to go to the games. And then if you look at the second photo from the Peach Bowl, one of the guys was actually a walk-on punter while they were in college. He never got in a game, but he was on the team for a couple of years.
Oh, nice.
And you'll see that there's a woman standing next to him, which is his new bride. Ooh. And apparently he did not get a full hall pass for this game. So she came along.
Does she like football?
Oh yeah. I've met her. She's a very nice person.
Well,
yeah,
she likes football. Come one, come all.
Yeah, I understand. But, you know, when in a guy's trip, when he's bringing his wife, it's, you know, it doesn't make the trip bad. It just changes it. Yeah.
Are you saying that a guy, you know, who brings his girlfriend along as the only girl, as the fifth wheel of an outing, is putting a little bit of a weird vibe on the rest of the fellas, Andy? Are you saying that?
No, I'm just saying that it's just different, you know, from a guy's trip when there's a woman.
It's unusual, right?
Yeah, but he's a newlywed, so it's kind of understandable.
All right. Well, if you know anyone that does this, please reach out to me at zabe@yahoo.com. I'm interested to hear that because, that's an interesting dynamic right there. All right, Andy, we've gone too long. I appreciate your time. Let's settle in for hopefully one more Cracker Jack football game tonight on Sunday, and then we'll see about tomorrow night the Houston Texans and the Pittsburgh Steelers. And other than that, I will check in next week, my friend. Thank you.
All right, Zabe, take care.
Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
We might be in the final quarter of the football season, but that doesn't mean winning season is over. Oh no. With MyBookie and its cash out system, you are in control of how you bet and how you win for the rest of the season. Season win totals, parlays, points totals. If you're on the right side, you can get out while the getting is good. Cash out. Use the funds on other bets. Or just let it ride for the chance at a bigger payday. Any way you slice it, you are in control. To get started, go to mybookie.ag now. That's mybookie.ag. Register for an account for free. When you're ready, make your first deposit. And remember to use promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. And grab a welcome bonus on the house. That's promo code ZABE to claim your deposit bonus. The season is running out, but winning season has just begun. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere at mybookie.ag.